So, question number one then. Dear Bhante, we are instructed to wear clothes which cover shoulders and elbows. Could you please explain why monks are wearing clothes with one shoulder is all naked? Okay. For me, it drives erotic desires, really. I think that's a joke, I'm sure. Okay, that's the first question. Number two, what are you doing during long flights as Australia to Riga? It takes 20 hours. Are you meditating? Thank you.
Okay, you want to pass it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pirmais jautājums, dārgais Bhante. Mēs esam instruēti laukā ar tādu apģērbu, kas nosedz plecus un elkoņus. Vai jūs varētu izskaidrot, kāpēc mūki laukā drāmas, kas vienu plecu nenosedz? Tādējādi skolotājs piebilst, ka tas iespējams ir ilgsums, to norāda arī smainīšu, ja es pareizi saredzu, ka tas, restīvi šī mūka apģērba īpatnība, rada erotiskas vēlmes. Otrais jautājums. Ko jūs darāt ilgos lidojumos, kā piemēram pārlidojumu atrādus uz Rīgu, kas prasa vasāk 20 stundas, vai jūs meditējat vai darat ko citu? Paldies.
Ok. Ok, so basically the idea with covering up reasonably well is just, you know, basically as you say, it's to sort of be modest and, you know, not too kind of, that's obviously the reason. If you find that this is very kind of, it's, you must be a very sensitive person, probably, I think. But this is just a standard way that things were done in India 2,500 years ago. This is where the monks wore their robes. So we're basically just doing it the same way here. Yeah. That's basically the way it is like that. So the idea is just to, sorry, I'm getting in my view now. The idea is just to find it, you know, that balance basically, where it's neither, it neither drives any desires, nor is it kind of overstrict.
Konkrētais standiāra veids ir tas, kas bija, kas tika laukāts Indijā, 2500 gadus atpakaļ, un tad vienkārši tiek ievērota tā laika tradīcija. Bet tā galvenā doma attiecībā uz apģērbu ir, lai tas nebūtu pārlieku atsedošs un tā teikt, tā kā būtu šis vidusceļš, ka nebūtu iedraukšana vienā vai otrā galējībā.
Yeah, so but sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just the mind, right? Sometimes the mind has defilements. And sometimes it doesn't matter how much people cover up, because sometimes the defilements are just too strong and you see whatever you want to see, basically. This is part of the problem. So the thing is that there's like a balance there. Sometimes the external things can be a trigger, but sometimes it's just the mind itself that triggers these good things. So.
Jā, bet galvenais jau tomēr ir pats prāts un tajā esošie piesārņojumi, neatkarīgi no tā, cik ļoti cilvēks var apsikt savu ķermeni, tik un tā, ja kāds prāts gribēs tur ieraudzīt to, ko tas grib, tad tur nekāds apģērba daudzums nepalīdzēs. Tā kā primāri tik galā ar šīm prāta aptumšojumu piesārņojumiem.
Okay, so next one. What are you doing during the long flights from Australia to Riga? Okay, because what I do sometimes I do a bit of meditation, but it's quite hard to meditate on a plane, you know. It's not kind of the best kind of environment. So sometimes I just read a newspaper, right? So I take a newspaper with me, read a newspaper, or sometimes they have like you know, Sudoku games on the plane. So I play maybe a few Sudoku games, or I just sit quietly and peacefully. Most of the time I just sit quietly and peacefully and don't do anything at all. That's usually what happens. So,
atbildot uz jautājumu, kas tiek darīts ilgos pārlidojumos, tad atbildot ir tā, ka reizēm es meditēju, bet tā kā lidmašīna nav pati piemēram tā kā un ērtākā vieta priekš meditācijas, tad to es nedaru vienmēram visu laiku. Reizēm es vienkārši izvēlos palasīt kādu avīzi, vai reizēm lidmašīnās ir pieejams sudoku spēles, un tad es parisinu tās, vai arī faktiski visbiežāk es nedaru neko un esmu mierā.
Yeah, but actually on the way from Singapore to here, I actually slept quite a bit as well. I slept for a few hours because it was night flight.
Un tā kā konkrētais lidojums bija no Singapūras, un tas bija mūsu lidojums, es izmantoju vai
Yeah, but I must admit, planes are not the best place to be a monk, actually. Yeah. And it's certainly, certainly true. I wouldn't recommend it.
Jūs esat mūks, mūķen, tad es neieteiktu to lidmašīnu, kā jūs to uzdevēšanās
Sometimes they, Ajahn Brahm is my teacher in Australia, he gets asked, you know, where do you live? And he said, most of the time I live on the airplane, because he travels so much everywhere.
Manam skolotāju Ajahn Brahm reizēm tiek vaicāts, kur jūs dzīvojat, un viņš mēdz atbildēt, ka viņš dzīvo lidmašīnā, jo faktiski tas ir tā vieta, kur viņš ļoti bieži uzturās ceļojot.
Okay, you want to try another question?
Yeah,
come on there. Yeah.
Vai es pareizi saprotu, ka budisms mūs aicina pamest pasaulīgo dzīvi, bet kā es varu pamest savus bērnus, ja es viņus nepametu, tikai izslēdzu, izmetu no savām domām, tad vienu dienu viņi vairs nebūs manā dzīvē. Vai tas nav pārlieku egoistiski? So the question is, do I understand it correctly that Buddhism is encouraging us to leave the worldly life. That's the first part. And second, how can I leave my children if I will leave them, if I will not leave them, but only kind of switch them out of my mind and leave them out of my thoughts, then one day they will not be in my life. Isn't it overly egotistical?
Okay. Well, the first thing is that what Buddhism doesn't actually really recommend one thing or the other, right? The monastic life, of course, that is a life when you leave home, that is one only one possibility. Now, the Buddha doesn't say you have to become a monk or you have to become a nun. Now, what the Buddha says is that you have to practice a certain path. If you want happiness in life, if you want peace, you have to practice in a certain way. And that is true whether you are a monk or a nun or whether you are a lay person. So the path is basically the same. So sometimes, it is true, sometimes you have too many obligations, right? You have responsibilities towards your children, towards your parents perhaps, towards anything else in society. And when you have responsibilities, as you say, you can't just leave that and just do whatever you want. That is maybe not egotistical necessarily, but it's like not taking your responsibilities seriously. So these things are important. So the idea is that what you have to do instead, there's nothing wrong with going forth, there's nothing wrong with becoming a monk or a nun, but first of all we have to be ready, right? It can't just be an ideal, the Buddha said I should do so, so I must do so. If it doesn't come from the heart, it's not going to work.
Bet tas galvenais ir noteikti dzīvesveidā principa vai ceļš, kas ir jāveic neatkarīgi no tā, vai jūs esat mūks vai laicīgais cilvēks. Un ir taisnība, ka mūsu pasaulīgā laicīgā dzīve pieprasa no mums veikt un ievērot daudz dažādus pienākumus. Un tāpēc mūka ceļš ir viens no veidiem, kā mēs varam būt brīvāki, vēl tik vairāk laiku citām lietām, bet katrā ziņā kļūšana par mūku kā ideāls nav tā piemērotākā pieeja, lai kļūtu par mūku, tas ir jāizjūt kā aicinājums un tam jābūt no sirds nepietiek.
So basically, becoming a monk or a nun, you do it when it comes naturally, right? You feel, okay, now is the time, now it feels good to me. Yeah. If you force it too much, if you try it when you're not ready, it's usually not going to work out. So the best thing to do sometimes is just, you go to a monastery for a while, check it out, try it out, and see what happens. Because the idea of becoming a monastic is often very different from the reality of being a monastic. So you have to try it. And then you will find out. And then gradually, step by step, stage by stage, you can move in that direction. Yeah.
Un tad tas, ka mēs kļūstam par mūku vai mūķiem, tam ir jānotiek dabīgā ceļā, tam ir jābūt izjust un paties no sirds. Jo pretējā gadījumā, ja mēs cenšamies piespiest sevi sakot kādam ideālam, tas šis mērķis kļūt par mūku vai mūķi, ja mēs ticamāk būs neveiksmīgs. Un ja mēs vēlamies ieteiksim mūku vai mūķenes ceļu, tad ieteikums ir aizbraukt uz kādu klosteri, izmēģināt, kā tas ir dzīvē, jo nereti tā mūsu ideja un priekšstats atšķirās no tā, kā tas ir realitātē.
Yeah. And then you have to consider your responsibilities, right? Can I do it? Is it the right time for me? Do I have responsibilities which are stopping me? And then you take all these things into consideration, and then you can come to a decision which is right for you.
Un tad mēs varam izvērtēt, kāda ir mūsu atbildība parastajā dzīvē, kāda ir mūsu pienākumi, un vai mēs tātad varam uzņemties šo mūsu jauno lomu, vai mums ir jāpaliek vecajā vietā.
It is actually quite interesting because if you when you read the life story of the Buddha, the way the life story of the Buddha is told is that you know he left his family life and he left his wife and his child behind him. But and this is kind of the traditional way that this story is told. But the reality is actually quite different. When you read the suttas, what it says in the suttas is that he had spoken to his parents and his parents were crying and they wished otherwise. And the implication is that he actually organized things, you know, for his son and for his wife or whatever. Things were organized and things had kind of been agreed on by his parents. That is the implication you see in the suttas. And it's quite different from the way the story normally is told.
Un mēs varētu būt dzirdējuši šo tradicionālo veidu, kā tiek pasniegts Buddhas divas stāsts, kurā tūbrītējies vēl nebūt. Vajadzīgais cilvēks pamēta sievu un bērnus, lai dotos garīgīgos nuklējumos, bet patiesībā, ja mēs lasām sutas, tad mēs atklājam, ka tas guži nebija tā, kā tas ir pierasts dzirdēt šodien. Proti, vispirms būtu runāju ar vecākiem, kuri tā kā raudāja un nebija guži iepriecināti par būdu Buddhas izvēle, bet katrā ziņā būtu apspriedi to ar viņiem, un tāpat arī viņš noorganizēja vietas priekš savā dēlu un sievas, pirms viņš arī visu atstāja.
This is one of the things when you go to Asia, sometimes you have like these Christian missionaries in Asia. This terrible thing is Christians always want to convert people. And one of the things they say to the Buddha is, look at this Buddha that you have. You know, he just left his child and wife behind. He's a terrible man, you know. You can't do this kind of thing yet. This is the kind of argument you often hear by these missionaries.
Tā ir arī viena lieta, ko mēs dzirdēt nevaram no kristiešu un misionāriem Āzijā, kā viņi cenšas pārliecināt budismas pievērsties kristietībai. Un, protams, sāk man paraugoties, cik nekrietni būtu izrīkojās, ka viņš ņēma un pamata savu sievas un bērnus, nu kas tā dara.
And there is some truth, right? There is some truth to that. If he really did that, there is some truth to that. But I don't think that's actually the right story. It's not actually what happened, as far as I'm concerned.
Un var teikt, ka mēs varam atrast zināmas norādes uz to tekstos, bet manuprāt, tas nav goši pareizākais izklāsts un neatbilst goši tā, kā tas notika patiesībā.
Okay, so if I don't answer the questions fully, whatever, you please just raise your hand and ask me to, you know, ask a follow-up question if you want to. You know, a little bit of interaction is fine as far as I'm concerned. So please do so if I don't reply to everything.
Yeah, es neatbildu uz jautājumu pilnīgā veidā, tad jūs esat aicināti pacelt roku un uzdot papildus jautājumus.
Okay. Good. Is that everything you think? Did I respond to everything?
So is Buddhism egotistical and is it encouraging to leave the worldly life or basically, mostly, no? Yes.
It's, as I said, it's really up to the individual. It depends on the situation or circumstances. Yeah.
Atkarīgs no katra cilvēka konkrētā gadījuma.
Yeah. It's the opposite of egotistical, it's compassionate, it's thinking about everybody else, so that's the idea.
Drīzāk tas ir nevis egoistiski, bet izsvērt to, kas ar līdzjūtības palīdzību izsvērt to, kas ir pareizākais situācijā.
Sometimes the strange thing about, you know, when somebody goes forward and becomes a monk or a nun, sometimes there can be like an initial pain, right? That happened with me when I said I want to become a monk. My parents said, "Are you crazy? You want to become a Buddhist monk? You must be out of your mind. Why on earth do you want to do that?" They said things like, "You know, we must have failed in our upbringing and this kind of thing." So, but the reality, so that sometimes there is a bit of short-term pain, but in the long run, it often has a very powerful impact, right? If you have a family member who becomes a monk or a nun, and that you can actually see the change in them, that something happens, you get a chance to talk with them in a new way, you get kind of more quality interaction rather than quantity interaction. In the long run, I think that the result is actually very, very positive, and it's not a negative result at all. Sometimes we have to look at things from different angles, short-term versus long-term, and all these other kind of issues.
Un tad var gadīties, ka sākuma posmā, ka uzdot par mūku, parādās kaut kādas sāpes vai īstermiņā nepatīkamas lietas, bet tās faktiski, teiksim, kā konkrēti manā gadījumā, kad es novēru to par mūku, man atsākums jums bija ļoti neatņemami un domāju, ka nu, viņi ir izgāzušies ar savu audzināšanu. Ja reiz kaut kas tāds notiek, bet ilgtermiņā, ja mēs to paskatāmies, tad tas sniedz citu kvalitāti, piemēram, ģimenes locekļi tādējādi var iegūt daudz kvalitatīvāku komunikāciju savā starpā, tās nav tik kvalitatīva, bet toties rodas cita saturs, cita kvalitāte, un tā kā ir jāspēj saskatīt šie īstermiņa aspekti un ilgtermiņa aspekti.
So, and this is what happened to me, you know, initially they thought I was completely mad to become a monk, and gradually you become less and less mad, right? This is the funny thing, less and less mad, and more normal there. And after a while, your parents, you know, they see you, they see that this is working, they start to, you know, they see that you're not crazy after all, that this is not some kind of mad cult, which is kind of brainwashing you, this kind of thing, so. And then after a while, things start to turn around. And eventually, the day came, my parents started to ask me questions, you know, what is this Buddhism all about? And now, they are actually reading books about Buddhism. When I go back to Norway, they would often ask me to teach them meditation and this kind of thing. So it's like it's turned 180 degrees. And now they don't call themselves Buddhists, but I would say at heart, they probably are thinking pretty much like Buddhists.
No tā sākotnējā sašutuma, ka ak vai notiek kaut kas traks, cilvēks ir kļūst par mūku, tas pakāpeniski mazinās un tas priekšstats, ka cilvēks ir darīt kaut ko traku, tāds mazinās. Krietnēt mazinās un cilvēks jau tiek uzskatīts par normālu, piemēram, manā gadījumā vecāka redzēja, ka es neesmu piesaistījies kaut kādām kultām, kas veic smadzeņu skalgošanu. Viņi redz, ka ir notiek kvalitatīvas labas izmaiņas pozitīvo pusi, galva beidās viņi pat sāk man uzdot jautājumus, un šobrīd pat mani vecāki lasa budismu grāmatas, un kaut arī viņi paši nesauc sev par budistiem. Mēs domāju, ka viņi lielā mērā ir pieņēmuši budismā domāšanas veidu.
Okay, so I hope you're happy with that. If not, then whatever. If not, then you can ask more questions later on. Okay, so the next one here is, what is a meditation? So what is meditation? Okay, the Buddhist word for meditation is jhayati. Jhayati basically is the same root as jhana, which is like a profound state of peace and calm.
And atbildi, kā meditācijas ordinomais vārds ar džērti, un tas ir tā pati sakna, kas vārdām džērti.
So in Pali, the idea of meditation is just this very profound state of it has two qualities. Meditation should always have two qualities. It should have samatha and vipassana. And if it is real meditation, those two qualities always go together. And those two qualities are calm and clarity. Sometimes you can be calm, right? You can, for example, feel when you're tired, you can feel quite peaceful, quite calm, but you haven't got the clarity because you are tired or you are slothful. At other times you can be quite clear, but your mind can be restless. You feel a sense of clarity, but restlessness. So that is clarity without calm. So meditation is when clarity and calm, samatha vipassana, comes together and you're moving in that direction, becoming more calm and more clear at the same time. That is meditation practice.
Tad mēs varam reizēm justies mierīgi, ka mēs noguruši, bet tajā brīdī mums trūkst prāta dzidruma un skaidrības. Savukārt mēs varam izjust ļoti lielu skaidrību tajos brīžos, kad mēs esam nemierīgi. Tātad meditācijas stāvoklim ir ļoti svarīgi, ka ir abi šie stāvokli proti miers, un skaidrība un meditācija meditācijas procesam ir raksturīgs tas, ka abi šie stāvokļi paliek tātad, dziļāk un pavairojas.
Okay, so the next question here is what was your road to becoming a monk? How did you become a monk? Okay, so it was started when I was at university in Norway. And I, for some reason, I don't know why, but I had this desire, I wanted to go to Asia. So there was an exchange program at this university. And you know, people exchanged, Norwegians would go to Asia, and Asians would come to Norway, and exchange all the way around the world. So I got the chance to go into Japan on an exchange program.
Tad nākušais jautājums, kā es kļūtu par mūku, tas sāka notikt universitātē, kad es mācījos Norvēģijā. Un tad mani, nezinu, kāpēc, radās vēl doties uz Āziju, un tajā laikā pastāvēja apmaiņas programmas, ko studenti varēja doties apmaiņā no vienas valsts uz otru, un es konkrēti izvēlējos Japānu.
And then when I was in Japan, I read about Buddhism for the first time in my life. I think I was 21 at the time, and I went to some Buddhist monasteries, I saw some big Buddhist monuments and all these kind of things. And it's very strange, but you feel something familiar about this. You feel that this is something about this which makes sense to me straight away. Yeah.
Un Japānā es pirmo reizi izlasīju modisma grāmatu, un tad man bija apmēram 25 gads, un es apmeklēju dažādas modisma svētvietas un monumentus tur, un tam bija tāda dīvaina atkal sastapšanās izjūta vai tāda sajūta, ka tas man ir jau pazīstams.
It's very hard to explain, isn't it? I mean, I grew up in Norway. My parents aren't Buddhists. They never taught me anything about Buddhism. I didn't have any Buddhist friends. I didn't have any Asian friends. I had nothing like that. And still, there was this kind of draw towards this and a kind of recognition when you see it.
Un to ir ļoti grūti izskaidrot, jo es uzaugu Norvēģijā, kur budismas tā kā nav nekas parasts, un arī sāk man neko nebija skaidrojuši par modismu, man nebija arī tā bieta, no kuriem es varētu būt bijis iespaidojies.
And the only way that I can explain it, the only way which sort of makes sense to me, is that I was a Buddhist maybe in the past life.
Un vienīgais veids, kā es pats to varu izskaidrot, ir, ka iespējams kādā iepriekšējā dzīvē esmu bijis budists.
So if you ask me why I'm a Buddhist, it's probably because I was a Buddhist in the past life.
Jā, jūs vajadzētu, kāpēc es šobrīd esmu budists, man atbild būt tā, ka tas visticamāk ir tāpēc, ka es kādā no iepriekšējā dzīvē biju budistu mūks.
Okay, but and then after I had been to Japan, I came back to Norway again, and one of my friends, he had a book on meditation practice, so I started to practice meditation. And for me, that was maybe the most powerful of all reasons why later on I wanted to become a monk, because meditation had an impact on me. I had some nice results straight away. And then later on in life, when I was doing some more studies, I realized I wasn't really happy. But when I meditated, I was happy. Maybe there was something in meditation that could be useful.
Un vēlāk es atgriezos no Japānas Norvēģijā. Un tad es pateicoties kādai meditācijas grāmatai sāku meditēt un uzreiz jau izjūtu rezultātus. Un tas bija tas, kas man iedvesmoja turpināt. Un vēlāk, kad es jau biju arī kaut kādas lietas sasniegtas dzīvē, tad es pamanīju, ka laimīgs es jūtos nevis no kaut kādām šīm lietām vai sasniegumiem, bet laimīgi man padara tie brīži, kad es meditēju.
So I, because of that, I sort of decided to go to a monastery and to check it out, and that was it. I was done. It was finished. Yes.
Tāpēc es nolēmu doties uz klostru un izmēģināt, kā ir tur, un kad es tur nokļuvu, tad tā lieta jau bija pabeigta. Es skaidri zināju, ka man ir tur jāpaliek, un es tur pārstu.
So be very careful when you go to the monastery. You never know what's going to happen next.
Tā kā esat uzmanīgi, jūs dodaties uz klostru, un jūs nekad nevarat zināt, kas notiks.
Okay. That is the story in brief. So the next one here is, what are the main changes in your life since becoming a monk? Okay, so the main change is basically that I feel life is incredibly meaningful.
Nākošais jautājums, kādas izmaiņas ir notikušas kopš jūs esat kļuvusi par monku? Atbilde ir tāda, ka es esmu izjūtis, cik ārkārtīgi vērtīga ir dzīve.
As far as I'm concerned, Buddhism to me is really the answer to the question of what is the meaning of life.
Un cik tā tas attiecas uz mani, tad buddhisms sniedz atbildes jautājumu, kāda ir dzīves jēga.
And if you have found, if you feel you have found the question to the answer to the meaning of life, then what else do you want to do?
Un ja jūs esat atradis jautājumu, atbildes jautājumu, kāda ir dzīves jēga, tad kas vēl mums ir nepieciešams?
So that is the main change. And with that, you know, one of the reasons why you remain as a monk. The Buddhist path is a path of purification, right? We looked at that this morning and the rest of the day. And you, so as long as you are making that progress, as long as you're feeling that you're going in the right direction, you're becoming more pure, the good states inside of you are improving, you become more mindful, you become more kind, you become more at peace. As long as those things are growing all the time, and the bad things, the anger, the irritation, the desires, they are coming down, as long as you can see that is also the extent to which monastic life is meaningful.
Un tā ir tā galvenā izmaiņa, un vēl viena svarīga lieta, kas, par ko mēs runājam šorīt, ir attīrīšanās, kas notiek buddhismu praktizēšanas ceļā. Un, ja mēs pamanām, ka mūsos attīstās pozitīvie, labie stāvokļi, kā laipnība, miers, prakses rezultātā un mazinās negatīvie prāta stāvokļi, kā dusmas un aizkaitināmība, tas arī liecina, ka izvēlētais ceļš vai pareizam virzienam.
Okay, so try one of your questions.
Yeah. So, when I meditate, I get a feeling of hopelessness because I get a feeling that my mind or me or I will never be peaceful. Why is it so, and will it ever change?
Yeah, of course it will change.
But jautājums bija, meditējot man pārņem bezcerību, ka es un mans prāts jau kad būsim mierā, kāpēc tā, un vai tas kaut kad mainīsies atbildēt, ka protams.
Remember that, you know, the Buddhist point of view is that the reason you are the way you are is because of conditioning, right? Because of circumstances.
Tā atbilde, kāpēc, ko sniedz buddhisms, kāpēc mēs šobrīd esam tā, kā esam piedzīvojami, to, ko piedzīvojam, ir tas, ka tas balstās uz noteiktiem nosacījumiem, uz apstākļiem, kā mēs sevi esam vadījuši iepriekš.
So as soon as you change the circumstances, as soon as you start doing different things, as soon as you start, you know, having different friends, whatever it is you do, as long as things are changing, then you will also change as a consequence.
Un tiklīdz mēs izvēlamies citādus apstākļus, tiklīdz mēs izvēlamies citādu vidi, citādus draugus, citādas lietas un tā tālāk, lietas sāk mainīties.
So basically, you know, from a Buddhist point of view, the things, if you condition yourself in the right way, if you have the right influences around you, you will become peaceful whether you want to or not to. So if you don't want to be peaceful, you better leave quickly here.
Buddhists say that izvēloties attiecības apstākļus un nosacījumus, kas mūs iespaido, mēs neizbēgam radām ietekmi uz sevi, un tad, ja mēs nevēlamies kļūt mierīgi, tad mums ir ieteikums pamest šo lietu pēc iespējas ātrāk.
So basically one of the reasons why the mind isn't peaceful, the reason why the mind is restless, it runs here and runs there, is because it's not really happy in the present moment too.
Un galvenais iemesls, kāpēc prāts ir nemierīgs, ir tas, ka tas šajā brīdī nav laimīgs.
So the path of the Buddhist practice, the path, the idea of morality and generosity and kindness is actually to make you, one of the main reasons for that is because it makes you feel good inside of yourself.
Un viena no galvenajām lietām, kāpēc buddhisms uzsver tikumību, laipnību un devību, ir tas, ka praktizējot šīs lietas, mēs sagam labāk sajūtamies savā iekšēnē.
If you have a kind heart, a natural consequence of a kind heart is to feel good about yourself.
Ja mums ir laipna sirds, tad labības sekas no tā ir, ka mēs jūtamies labi.
So you keep on doing this, you keep on practicing in this way, and gradually, it's like you're lifting your mind up. You're cutting off all the heaviness which comes from maybe the negative thinking or whatever. You cut all that off, and then the mind starts to lift up, it starts to soar. The good qualities is like the helium which pulls it up, and the not doing the bad things, you're cutting off the weights that hold it down.
Ir kā tāds liekais balasts, ko mēs atmetam, savukārt pozitīvās un tikumīgās lietas, ko mēs praktizējam, ir tāds kā helijs, kas palīdz mums celties augstāk.
Okay. And it's amazing, because you can see this happening inside of yourself. The present moment becomes beautiful. When you're happy with yourself, here and now, there's no point in running into the past, running into the future, fantasizing. All of these things become irrelevant, because you're happy here and now, right? And then when you're happy here and now, it's easy to meditate, it's easy to be peaceful. It just happens by itself. And that is the ideal way of meditation. It should be very easy, it should be very simple, it shouldn't be a struggle. If it is a struggle, then it means that you should just relax and try to be happy with the restless mind.
Un tad, ja šis brīdis priekš mums kļūst skaists, vairs nav nepieciešamības pakarties kaut kur pagātnē vai pārcelties kaut kur tālu nākotnē, ja mēs izjūtam šo brīdi kā patīkam, tad ir viegli meditēt, un tas ir pavisam vienkārši, un mums vairs nav nepieciešams cīnīties, un tad mēs vairs, ka mums vairs nav nepieciešamība cīnīties, tad mums ir dabiska iespēja relaksēties un atslābt.
So please don't despair, just learn to accept yourself for what you are. It's okay to have a mind which is restless, it's okay to be the way you are. Don't despair about that. Rather think to yourself, well, what a wonderful thing it is that I have found this path, which maybe you don't know it yet, but maybe this path will take me towards more peace, towards more happiness. What a great thing that is. Instead of being kind of despairing, see the hope, see the possibilities for the future.
Un tādēļ nevajadzētu krist izmisumā vai pieņemt to stāvokli, kādā mēs šobrīd esam, un pieņemt tādu iespējamību, ka mēs esam iespējams atradoši ceļu, kas var palīdzēt nonākt pie lielākā miera un vairāk laimes, un tad, teiksim, tas, ka mēs šeit var kaut ko kā iemesls, lai varētu nedaudz gaišāk, pozitīvāk paraudzīties uz mūsu stāvokli.
Okay, let's go on to the next one. So this question here asks, what does it mean if during the time of meditation the body starts to vibrate and tremble?
Nākošais jautājums ir, ko nozīmē tas, ka meditācijas laikā ķermenis sāk trīcēt vai vibrēt?
So what you have to distinguish here, you have to distinguish between why the trembling is happening. There's two possibilities. One reason it trembles could be that you're using too much willpower, so the body is not relaxed. That's one possibility.
Aplūkot vairākus iemeslus, kas varbūt pamatā šīm ķermeņa vibrācijām, viens no iemesliem ir, ka mēs varbūt pielietojam pārāk lielu gribas spēku, un tas atstāja ietekmi uz fiziskā ķermeņa procesiem.
The other reason could be that you are relaxing, and because you are relaxing, you're relaxing the muscles, so vibrations happen because of the fact that you are relaxing.
Un otra iespējamība ir, ka mēs atslābināmies un tādējādi vibrācijas mēs pamanām, kā atslābināšanās blakus rezultāti.
Because when you relax, then, you know, sometimes the muscles do things as a consequence of just the relaxation.
Un tad, kad mēs atslābstam, reizēm muskuļos parādās nabīga reakcija šajā procesā.
Another possibility, and third possibility, is the fact that it's not actually anything at all happening with the body, but it's just the mind perceiving the body in a certain way. So you need to investigate to find out which one it is. So if it is because you're using too much willpower, if that is the reason, then what you need to do is you need just to learn to relax again. That's the bad kind of vibration, right? Not good vibrations, bad vibrations. So when you, that is one possibility. The other possibility, if it is because you're relaxing and the muscles do kind of things because you're relaxing, then it's nothing to worry about. All you have to do is just continue, allow it to be, and then it will slowly calm down by itself. If it is a perception in the mind, if it has nothing to do with the body, then you have to ask yourself, what is that mind state you have in here?
Savukārt, ja tas nav neviens no pirmajiem diviem, un tā ir tikai uztvere prātā, tad mums ir jājautā, kas ir tas, kas liek parādīties.
We're trying to develop mind states that are peaceful and calm and kind, and not, you know, angry or full of desires or whatever. So if you see that your mind is actually becoming more peaceful, if you're becoming more gentle inside, more kind inside, and, you know, more compassionate, if all the good qualities are increasing and the bad ones are going down, there's nothing to worry about.
Un tad mums ir jāspēj saprast, kas notiek prātā, ja mēs kļūstam vairāk mierīgi, vairāk laipni, maini, mīlotīgi. Tad tur nav neko sevišķi nepieciešams darīt savukārt, ja mēs manām, ka drīzāk vairāk parādās dusmas vai kas tamlīdzīgs, tad ir nepieciešams domāt, ko tu iesāk.
But if you find that maybe your mind is becoming confused, or you are kind of getting deluded, or maybe you're getting upset, or desires are increasing, in other words, if the bad states are going, becoming more, that is when you have to be more careful.
Un mums ir jāpiesargās, ja prātā parādās vairāk apjukums, vairāk vēlmes un šīs nepozitīvās lietas, tad mums ir jāsāk uzmanīties.
So the vibration in itself is neither good nor bad. It's the reason why the vibration is there, combined with the kind of mind state. That is what is important.
Tad vibrācijas paši par sev no labas nesliktas. Tas ir tas iemesls, kamdēļ tas parādās un tie prāta stāvokļi, ar ko šīs vibrācijas parādās kopā, kam mums ir jāpievērš uzmanība.
Ok, man try another one from there. Yeah. Okay.
Tad es pirms latviski atkarīgās rakšanās posmi no neziņas abiņķā, laikam, līdz prāts matērija, kas ir nāma rupa, Tātad, kāda ir to daba un kā tie pāriet no viena otrā? I think this is a kind of a smart and difficult question. Basically, it's asking about the dependent origination, the stages of dependent origination from ignorance, avidya, till nama rupa. What is the nature of this and how does it go from one to another?
Okay. From avidya to nama rupa. Okay. Okay, well, you know, this is one of those controversial questions. You find that people have different ideas about these things. But I always get my inspiration of these things straight from the suttas.
And šis ir tāds pretinīgs jautājums, un cilvēkiem ir dažādi viedokļi par to, bet es savu galveno iedvesmu savu izvēlos suttas.
So basically, the first link of dependent origination is avidya. Avidya means not understanding, right?
Un tad pirmais no atkarīgās rašanās posmiem ir avidya, kas nozīmē tāda neziņa vai nesaprašana, neizpratne.
And there's a number of things you don't understand, but maybe some of the core, maybe the core thing that you don't understand is where is true happiness and where is suffering. Yeah.
Un ir vairākas lietas, ko mēs nesaprotam, bet galvenās ir tās, kur ir laime un kā ir mums ciešana.
And the second thing you don't understand is that you have the sense of self. And because there's a sense of self there, you think that you can actually control things and you can get the happiness you want and you can avoid the suffering that you don't want.
Un otra lieta ir es sajūta, kas liek mums domāt, ka mēs spējam kontrolēt lietas un panākt, ka mēs dabūsim laimi tā, kā mēs gribam un necietīsim.
So this is the core problem. So because you think that you understand happiness and suffering, and because you think you have the power inside of you to do things, to do something about this, then you engage in all these activities. These activities are called sankharas, and this is basically the will. So the will starts to do things to create that happiness for yourself and avoid the suffering.
Un tad pamatā tās ir šīs divas lietas, proti tas, ka mēs domājam, ka zinām, kur mēs spējam atrast laimi un kā neciest, un otrs ir šī esajūta, kas liek mums domāt, ka mēs spējam kontrolēt lietas tā, kā mēs gribam. Un tad faktiski tas vārds, kas šeit ir svarīgs, ir sankars, ko varētu tulkot kā gribas spēku, kas rodas no iepriekš minētā, un liek mums darboties saskaņā ar to, kā mēs iztēlojamies.
So you're like looking into the future, and you're trying to create happiness and try to avoid suffering for yourself in the future.
Tad faktiski mēs mēģinām raudzīties nākotnē un cenšamies radīt sev laimi un izvairīties no ciešanām.
And this creating activity, this almost like projecting yourself into the future, this is what karma is all about. You're creating karma because you're trying to control the world around you and create things for the future.
Un tas, ka mēs cenšamies projicēt savu nākotnē un darīt visādas lietas, tā iespējā ir tas, kas rada karmu.
And as long as there is that desire, that craving there, that craving for things in the future, the craving to exist, the craving for pleasure, that craving then drives consciousness onwards.
Un tās ir vēlmes, kas vēlas dažādas lietas, kas vēlas eksistēt, tas ir tas, kas turpinā likums riņķot cikliski.
As long as that desire is there, consciousness will be driven forward. And even when you die, that consciousness is actually, it cannot stop because the desire drives it on even after death.
Un tā kā mums pastāv šī vēlme dzīvotā apziņa, tad mēs nespējam to apturēt arī pēc miršanas un tāliek mums turpināt darboties.
And wherever there is consciousness, there is also nama rupa. Nama rupa is just the other aspects of the, you know, of physical existence. Nama rupa and consciousness always go together. Nama rupa is like the other aspects of mind, and it can also refer to a material phenomena like the body, for example.
Un visur, kur ir apziņa, tur kopā iet arī nama rupa, faktiski to varētu nosaukt ka tur, kur ir amzīna, tur tādā veidā, tādā veidā ir līdzīgi ķermenis.
Yeah. That's in brief how it works. I'm not going to go into much more detail about that because it can get quite complicated, these issues. So.
Tās ir pavisam īsumā, kā tas darbojas, un es šobrīd neiedzinājušos un neiešu te dziļumā, jo tālāk mēs ejam šajā tematā, jo lietas paliek sarežģītākas.
Okay, so let us move on to the next one. So here we have this one here says how not to get attached to our spiritual teacher, not the Buddha. Maybe you could share your experience living with Ajahn Brahm. Is it possible not to get attached to such a wonderful teacher? Thank you. Okay. Well, the way not to get attached, it doesn't matter if it is a, you know, sometimes you get attached to certain things, and certain things are okay to get attached to. Initially, when you practice the Buddhist path, there is going to be a little bit of attachment there to Buddhist ideas. For example, you start to practice virtue, you want to be kind to other people, there might be a little bit of attachment to that kindness. But it doesn't really matter, because it's a good kind of attachment. It's a bit like in the, you know, in the spiritual path can in a sense be looked upon as a ladder here. Now, as long as there is a sense of self inside of us, there will also be attachment, because attachment and sense of self are just two sides of the same coin. So you cannot avoid having attachments. It's impossible not to have attachments. So because it is impossible not to have attachments, what you have to do is you have to choose your attachments carefully, right? So instead of attaching too much to other people, instead of attaching to bad things, immoral conduct, you try to move the goalpost and you try to attach to something good instead. So this is the beginning of the path, you attach to something good. Okay, so you have a good teacher, say Ajahn Brahm or say the Buddha, so you attach to the Buddha. It doesn't matter so much because you're attaching to something good. It's better than attached to a mafia boss, right? It's not going to be very good for you. Some people are attached to the mafia. If you grow up in a mafia family, it's very difficult, right? Because they expect you to do certain things. And because they might be your parents, they might be your uncles, you will tend to drift in that direction. So it's very hard. So this is one of the problems. So this is what you do. And as you attach to the good things, because you are growing in good qualities, your attachments also decrease at the same time. So you don't have to hold on so hard anymore. So your attachments become less. And as you keep on going up, even though you are attaching to new things, with each thing you attach to, each new thing, the attachment is less strong because you are growing in good qualities inside of yourself. One of the things about growing in good qualities inside means you become more independent as a person. This is one of the most powerful things about this Buddhist path. You feel more independent as time goes by. Why? Because your source of happiness is inside. If your source of happiness is inside, the external world doesn't matter so much anymore. You are more free, you're more independent. This is actually a very beautiful thing, right? It doesn't matter what other people say so much anymore. It doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter whether they die, at least not so much. And you are more free inside of yourself. So this is part of that path. And it involves some degree of attachment, but actually it becomes less over time. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So don't worry too much about that. So, of course, when it comes to a teacher, let's say that you have a spiritual teacher, say it is Ajahn Brahm, say it is someone else. Even though you like Ajahn Brahm, whatever it is, you should always compare what any spiritual teacher says. You should compare it to the word of the Buddha. Never assume that you know. It's very hard to know, right? Okay, you like Ajahn Brahm, but is he really telling the truth? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. You can't be absolutely sure, right? So you need some kind of neutral ground by which you can compare what he's saying to. And that neutral ground is then the word of the Buddha. That must always be the neutral ground in Buddhism. Sorry, Edgar, I'm talking too long.
Jautājums par nepietiekšanos, kā nepietiekties garīgajiem skolotājiem un vai var pastāstīt no pieredzes, kā iespējams nepietiekties tādam lieliskam skolotājam kā Ajahnam Brahmam. Tātad atbildi, par pietiekšanos viss ir kārtībā, tikmēr, kamēr mēs pieķeramies pozitīvām, konstruktīvām lietām, proti, ja mēs pieķeramies piemēram tikumībai, ja mēs pieķeramies laipnībai, jo sevišķi ceļa sākumā, kad mēs sākam praktizēt budismu, droši vien būs neizbēgami, ka mūsos pastāvēs kaut kāda pieķeršanās pie šīs tikumības vai laipnības. Un tāpēc mēs varam pakalpoties uz garīgo ceļu kā uz tādām kāpnēm, un mums ir nepieciešams zināt vai paļauties uz pozitīvām lietām, lai mēs varētu virzīties uz priekšu. Un es sajūtu ir tas, kas liek mums pieķerties, un pieķeršanās, un es sajūtu ir tās lietas, kas ir kopā faktiski vienas monētas abas puses. Un tāpēc mums ir nepieciešams rūpīgi izvēlēties to, ka mēs pieķeramies, piemēram, ja mēs pieķeramies sliktiem cilvēkiem, tad nu, dabīgi, ka tas nebūs prātīgi, tas atstās mums negatīvo iespaidu. Un, piemēram, ir daudz vērtīgāk vai prātīgāk pieķerties kādām labam darījumu skolotājiem kā Džinam Brāmam vai Būdam, nevis kādām mafijas bosam, jo ir taisnība, ka cilvēki pieķerās arī mafijas bosiem, tāpēc, ka tas ir kāds viņu tēvocis vai kāds ģimenē, piemēram, kāds no vecākiem, un tāpēc ir svarīgi pieķerties šīm mums pozitīvajām lietām, jo ja mēs sakosim šo pozitīvo lietu attīstīšanai, tad neizbēgami samazināsies tās lietas, kas ir negatīvas mūsos, un tādējādi pieķeršanās un negatīvās lietas dabīgi zaudēs savu spēku un pozitīvās kvalitātes mūsos pieaugs, un šajā procesā mēs arī spējam kļūt neatkarīgāki, un tādējādi, kad mēs kļūstam neatkarīgāki, tas padara mūsu iekšēji daudz brīvākus, daudz laimīgākus, un tāpēc ir svarīgi šādā veidā pieeja šim nepieķeršanās procesam, kas attiecās uz pieķeršanos skolotāju, kā piemēram Aģēnu Brānu, tad ir, protams, ļoti grūti, tad bezkaislīgi nepieķerties, un viņš ir tik iedvesmojoši, ka mums rodas dabiska vēlme tam ticēt, mums ir nepieciešams visu laiku salīdzināt, ko saka skolotājs, vai tas atbilst tam, ko teica Būda, kaut arī mūsu skolotājs būtu ļoti iedvesmojoši, ļoti pamietinoši. Mums ir nepieciešams, lai mums ir tāds neitrāls pamats, ar ko mēs varam salīdzināt savu skolotāju.
Well, no. Okay. Okay. So yeah, that's basically basically the way I also deal with Ajahn Brahm. If I read the sutras and I see something that he says which to me doesn't seem to be right, I go to him and I say, you know, listen, this is what the Buddha says. You know, how, can you please explain what you're saying? Yeah.
Un tas ir tas, kā es tam pieeju arī attiecībās ar Ajahn Brahm, ja es lasu sutras un tur kaut kas nesaskan ar to, ko viņš saka, tad es dodos pie viņa un prasu, nu kā to skaidro.
And it's important to have that. It's important to have that kind of conversation with your teachers, right? Where you feel that you can have that openness, you can actually talk about things. If somebody doesn't want to talk about something and they kind of close up, for me that's always a sign of danger.
Un tāpēc ir svarīgi, ka mums ir iespēja pārunāt ar skolotāju lietas, jo ja es redzu, ka kāds skolotājs noslēdzās un nevēlas apspriest lietas, tad tā priekš manas ir zīme, ka tur ir jāsāk uzmanīties.
And to me, like, it's a sign of somebody who is very spiritually advanced. There's somebody you can ask about anything, yeah. And they never have any grudge, they never have any anger against you or any negativity towards you. Even if you are disrespectful towards them, they still don't hold that against you.
Un priekš manis tas, ka cilvēks ne netur uz jums ļaunprāt, nu, par to, ka jūs varbūt izturties necienīgi pret viņu uzdodot jautājumus. Tā ir tāda garīgas izaugsmes pazīme.
And this is one of the things I respect the most in Ajahn Brahm, that I can always ask him anything here. I can do anything, but he will never ever hold it against you personally, yeah, regardless of what you do. Okay, so. You don't have any more questions? Okay, so we'll move on to the next one. What does it mean to be a Buddhist and how do I become one? Okay, so to be a Buddhist basically means that you have some confidence in the teaching of the Buddha.
Tas, ka mēs esam buddhisti, nozīmē, ka mums ir kaut kāda zināma pārliecība un uzticība tam, ko Buddha māca.
And confidence in the Buddha, the way it is normally expressed in Buddhism, is that the idea of taking refuge in the triple jhana.
Un tas, ka mēs paļaujamies uz to, ko Buddha māca, formāls tojās, tajā, ka mēs pieņemam patvērumu pie tās augtījiem trim dārbumiem.
Taking refuge means that you have a confidence that these teachings can help you. So that if you have a problem in life, if there is something you need to solve, you have a place you can go to find the solution. That's basically what refuge means.
Un patvērums būtībā nozīmē to, ka tajā brīdī, kad mums dzīvē rodas kaut kādas nepatikšanas vai rodas kaut kāda sajūta, ko mēs tā kā negribam, tad patvērums ir tā vieta, kurā mēs meklējam palīdzību vai pie kuras mēs griežamies.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to have that, right? To have something in life you really believe in, something you have faith in, something you feel you can trust. It's a very powerful thing, yeah. And it gives you a sense of safety, in a sense. You cannot be absolutely safe because you cannot be 100% sure this is what it actually is. But still, you have a good feeling about it, and that gives you a sense of safety, basically, in life.
Un tas, ka mums ir dzīvē lietas uz ko mēs varam paļauties un kā uzticēties, tas ir tas, kas mūs jūs redzam drošības sajūtu. Kaut arī mēs varbūt nevaram par to būt līdz galam šobrīd pārliecināti, ja mums ir tāds patvērums, kur mēs parasti meklējam to palīdzību, tad tas mums patvērtība mierīgāk.
So being a Buddhist just means that you have that confidence inside of you, that this is where I should place my faith, so to speak, or place my confidence.
Un tas, ka mēs esam modisti, mums pār nozīmē to, ka tajās grūtībās, kas mums rodās, tā vieta, kur mēs griežamies, ir šis patvērums.
So how do you become a Buddhist? Well, at that point, you really are a Buddhist at heart, right? In Buddhism, it doesn't matter so much with ceremonies and rituals and these kind of things. What matters is how you feel inside of yourself. So if this is how you feel, in a sense, you're already a Buddhist.
Un būšana par budistu ir atkarīga no tā, kā mēs jūtamies iekšēnē. Mēs nekļūstam par budistiem kaut kādas formālas ceremonijas vai rituālu rezultātā. Tas, vai mēs esam budisti vai ne, ir atkarīgs no mūsu iekšējās pārliecības.
So sometimes it is nice to do a ceremony. Some people like to do ceremonies, and that can be nice. Sometimes it makes you feel more strongly about something. So if you want to do a ceremony, you can, you know, you can go up to the Buddha, well, not really the Buddha, the statue of the Buddha. Unfortunately, the Buddha is no longer around, so we have to deal with these things. But you can go to the, you know, just to bow down and say, you know, I take refuge in the triple gem, and then you can also take the five precepts. If you take the five precepts, it's a good way of showing that you're really committed to the Buddhist practice.
Tad mūsu laikos, kad mums vairs nav pats Buddha pieejams, mēs varam izmantot kā vēršanās objektu tādam Buddhas reprezentāciju un izrādīt cieņu vai pakvarnoties tam. Un, kas būtiskākais, pieņemt šos piecas uzvedības noteikumus.
Or if you prefer to do it to a living person, you can do, you know, go to anybody who you respect, it can be a layperson, it can be a monk, whoever, and then formally say that I take these things. If that makes you feel good, that's always a nice, that's also a nice thing to do.
Mēs varam doties pie kāda cilvēka, kas mūsos ar pārliecību un pieņemt šo patvērumu formālā rituāla veidā.
Okay, so this last one, this is just a asking for the sutras tomorrow, saying that I sought, that saw that tomorrow there will not be enough time to go through all the sutras. Yeah, we have to go a bit faster, I think, unfortunately. Yeah. So may I ask you please to speak about the one on removing resentment. That's a very nice sutra, I like that one, so I think we should do that one. And could you also give some example from nowadays? Also, I'll be very happy if we can listen to the one about abuse, which, okay. Okay, and thank you so much for having the time to visit us. Okay, that's very, very nice. So I'm sure we can do something like that, yeah.
Nākošais jautājums ir par to, ka es paskatījos grafikā un secināju, ka mums laikam nebūs īsti laika iziet cauri visām sutām, un tad bija lūgums īpaši pievērst uzmanību sutai, kā novērst aizvainojumu un sutai par apvainojumu.
Okay, it's amazing how long it takes, isn't it, to start reading the sutta, it just goes so slowly here. But that's a good thing, because it's nice actually, sometimes it's nice to consider these things in a bit of depth, right? To see what they said here. And then we can maybe go a bit faster tomorrow. We'll see what happens, but I will certainly take this into account.
Katrā ziņā ir jauki, ja mēs spējam iedzināties sutās, un tas padara to daudz dziļāku, vērtīgāku, bet es noteikti ņemšu vērā šo lūgumu un dzirdīsimies virzīties uz priekšu.
Okay, so now I'm feeling quite tired now, actually, to be quite honest, because I think the perk is about 2 o'clock in the morning or something. Yeah. So I will leave it at that, and if you, you know, do whatever you want to do, continue meditation or whatever, and just make sure you enjoy yourself, and then we'll see you again tomorrow morning. Yeah.
Un jāsaka, šajā brīdī es jūtos ļoti nogurs, jo pēc pērts laika šobrīd jau būtu 2 naktī, tā kā es došos... Piemēram,